in front of my pants. I explained my answer as fast as I could, and Miss Tobin didn't ask me any questions. She said, "Thank you, Tony. You can sit down now." I walked back to my seat, still holding the math book close to me, but I didn't have to worry. By then it was down. From now on, I'm going to make sure I always have a stack of books with me. Books are a lot better than my old raincoat. One afternoon after Thanksgiving vacation, Joel came over. My mother was in Queens with Angie and Vicky as usual, and Grandma was locked in her room. So was Maxine. She has this strict rule about how she has to have an afternoon nap every day so she'll be fresh as a daisy for supper, she says. My mother says, of course, that's only fair, so we're not supposed to disturb Maxine between 3 and 4:30. While I was pouring 2 glasses of milk, Joel asked if he could use the phone. "Sure," I said. I didn't pay any attention until I heard him ask for Denton F. Buchanan. I thought, oh no, he's at it again. He dialed 2 more times, going through his whole routine before he called back and said, "This is Denton F. Buchanan. Have there been any calls for me?" I said, "Same old tricks." Joel said, "Why don't you try it?" "No, I don't think so." "Come on, Tony, make up the name yourself." "I don't know, Joel. I could get in trouble." "For what? Nobody's going to know. Come on, think up a good name." "You're not chicken, are you?" "No." "Well then, go ahead." "Oh, all right." I concentrated until I came up with a name. "How's Peter Ira Grinch?" I asked. "Peter Ira Grinch? That's a nutty name." "I suppose, but it has good initials," I said. "P-I-G. Hey, yeah, I like that," Joel said. "How do I do it?" "Just dial a number. And make sure it's not long distance, though." I picked up the phone, clearing my throat several times as I dialed 7 digits and waited. It rang twice before a lady answered.
"Hello,"
she said. Hello, may I please speak to, Peter Ira Grinch?"
"What number are you calling?"
I repeated the number I dialed.
"You got the right number, but nobody's here by that name."
I hung up.
"You did fine," Joel said.
"I did? Sure. Now call back."
I dialed. This time she answered right away.
"Hello?
Peter Ira Grinch, please."
"Look, kid."
"How did you know I was a kid?"
"I told you. You got the wrong number."
I hung up without saying anything. I told Joel, "She doesn't like me."
"She doesn't have to like you," Joel said. "She doesn't even know you. Go ahead, Tony, 1 more time.
My hand shook as I dialed. It didn't even ring once.
"Hello,"
she said. You could tell she was mad. "Peter Ira Grinch, please."
"Listen, you lousy kids," she screamed. "I'm fed up with you and your lousy phone calls. I'm going to call the cops, you hear me? The cops. They'll find you and lock you up where you belong."
She slammed the phone down. "She said she's going to call the cops," I told Joel. He laughed.
"She's not calling anybody. Go on. Call 1 more time.
"I can't."
"What do you mean you can't? You've got to call and say you're Peter Ira Grinch. Otherwise it was all for nothing."
"I can't," I said. "Don't you know they can trace calls? Don't you know that, Joel?"
"You've got to call her again, Tony."
I got a stomach pain then. A bad one.
"I can't. I can't because I'm sick," I said, holding my stomach.
"You might as well go home, Joel. I mean it. I'm really sick." I rushed to the bathroom. When my mother came home, I was still in the bathroom, and my stomach was killing me. My mother said nobody can have that much gas and that she was going to take me to the doctor. She made a lot of phone calls to find out which doctor to see on Long Island. Finally, she decided on the one Diane Huber recommended. My mother thinks everything the Hubers do is perfect. I wanted to tell her the truth about Joel. I wanted to see how her face would look then, but the more I thought about telling her, the more my stomach hurt. The doctor's name was Frank Holland. He has gray hair and a big nose. He asked my mother to wait in the outer office while he checked me. I had to lie down on his examining table with most of my clothes off while he pushed and prodded at my belly. I was supposed to tell him if it hurt in any special place. It didn't.
"I think we'd better do a test on you, Tony," Dr. Holland said. "Come back tomorrow morning at 8,
Don't eat anything after 6 o'clock tonight, and no breakfast in the morning.
What kind of test? I asked.
Oh, I'm going to have a look inside you. It won't hurt, I promise.
I couldn't sleep at all that night. I was worried about the test and about what might be wrong with me. I hope I don't need an operation. I'm really scared about somebody cutting into me. The next morning, my mother took me back to Dr. Holland's office. He was right about the test. It didn't hurt, but he forgot to tell me I'd have to drink a glass of this horrible stuff called barium. It tasted like chocolate-flavored chalk. Dr. Holland explained that when I drank the barium and stood in front of his machine, he could see inside me. Being a doctor must be really neat. Maybe I'll go to medical school so I can look inside people, too. Then again, maybe I won't. Doctors have to do a lot messier stuff than that, and I don't even like dissecting frogs in biology. After the test, Dr. Holland said I should get dressed and come into his office. He talked to me from behind his desk. I noticed he doodled on a prescription pad, dog and cat faces mostly. I sat in a chair to his left, and I was pretty nervous. My hands were sweating like crazy.
"Well, Tony," he said, "there's nothing for you to worry about. Everything is going to be fine. Your test was normal."
"I don't need an operation?" I asked.
"Nope, nothing like that," Dr. Holland said.
"Then what? I mean, why do I get so many pains?"
"Well, I think you're pretty tense, Tony. And when a person gets tense about things, his insides tighten up, and that can cause pain."
I rubbed my hands on my pants.
"You know, it's nothing to be ashamed of," Dr. Holland said. "We all face some problems. It's just a question of learning how to handle those problems."
"Really? That's what it really is?"
"Yes. Some people call it nervous stomach."
"Oh, that. I knew a kid in Jersey City with nervous stomach. He was a creep."
"Well, we all hold things inside of us that might be better out in the open. Don't push yourself, Tony. Try to relax and unwind."
"I am relaxed," I said.
"Maybe now, but not always. In any event, I'm going to prescribe some pills for you. One tablet twice a day for 2 weeks. After that, only when you need them. When you get pains or diarrhea."
Dr. Holland handed me the prescription. As I stood up to leave, he said,
"What about girls?"
I sat back down. "Girls?" I asked.
"Yes. Do you think about them a lot?"
"Not much," I mumbled, looking down.
"It's perfectly normal, you know."
"Oh, sure, I know."
"Do you like a special one?"
"Kind of," I said.
"Does she know?"
he asked. "No."
"Maybe you'd feel better if you told her."
I could just see myself telling Lisa that. I shook my head at Dr. Holland. He gave me a small laugh.
"Well, you'll be just fine, Tony. There's no real problem here."
He stood up and patted me on the back. Then he opened the door to his waiting room and called in my mother. I read a magazine while she talked to the doctor. Everybody was very nice to me at home that day, even Maxine. She made my favorite kind of chicken for supper. While we were eating it, my mother told us that the stores were decorated for Christmas already, and that since this was to be our first Rosemont Christmas, she wanted it to be extra special.
"Make a list of what you want, Tony,"
my mother said. "I thought I was supposed to mail that list to Santa," I said. My mother laughed.
"Listen to him."
Then she said,
"Not so many years ago you did write to Santa."
"I'll tell you one thing," my father said. "This is going to be the first Christmas I've ever had where I don't have to worry about the bills. This year we can afford to splurge."
"I really don't know what I want," I said, "but I'll think about it." Later I took my pill and got ready for bed. I kneeled in front of my window until 10 o'clock, but Lisa's room stayed dark. When I got into bed, I thought, if I had binoculars, I could see her really good, up close, her face and everything. I knew what to put on my Christmas list. That night I dreamed about Lisa. My dream went on and on. It started out at the football game where Lisa put her arm around me. Only in my dream she didn't stop there. And Corky was in it too. She was sitting on the football field and Lisa kept saying,
"You see, Corky, here's what to do, to do, to do."
I woke up suddenly. It was morning. I felt wet and my pajamas were sticky.
Oh, God! There is something wrong with me.
really wrong. Dr. Holland doesn't know what he's talking about. I am so sick. This proves it.
Wait a minute. Wait just a minute. Maybe I had a wet dream. Yeah, I'll bet that's it. How about that? I thought they'd be different, though. I thought a lot more stuff would come out. And anyway, I wasn't sure I'd ever have one. At least not yet. What am I supposed to do? Maybe I should stay in bed all day. But then my mother might call the doctor and he'd probably tell her the truth. I better get up. But what about my pajamas?
I guess the first thing to do is get undressed. Okay, I will. I threw my pajamas into the hamper in my bathroom. I soaked a washcloth and threw that in too. Then I mixed up all the dirty clothes so everything would feel damp, not just my pajamas. When I went back to my room, I sat down on my bed. There was a spot on my sheet. I touched it. It was damp. Oh, no. Does that stuff stain? I grabbed some tissues and wiped it up. Will Maxine know? I suppose I could change my sheet. But that would look worse, wouldn't it? Then she might think I wet my bed like a little kid. No. Leave the sheet on and check it first thing after school to make sure nothing shows up. I had an awful day. I couldn't concentrate on my schoolwork, and I got yelled at in English class for not paying attention. How could I pay attention? I kept thinking that when I get home, the whole family's going to be there. Mom and Pop, Grandma, Ralph and Angie, Vicky, Maxine, even Cousin Ginger. They'll all know about me. Maxine will show them the sheet, and my mother will say, "I don't buy the best sheets for you to mess up, Anthony." I'll say, "It was an accident, Mom, a mistake. It won't happen again." And Ralph will say, "If you hadn't been thinking about that girl, this never would have happened." Then Pop will say, "I expected great things from you, Tony, and this is what I get." After school, I rushed home. Nobody was waiting for me. My mother wasn't even home. What a relief. I ran up to my room, closed the door behind me, and pulled down my bedspread and blanket. The sheets were changed. There were striped ones on my bed this morning, and now they were plain blue. Does that mean Maxine knows? Did she tell my mother? Or, wait a minute. Is this the day the sheets get changed every week? I can't remember. I don't think I'll ever be able to look at Maxine again. Finally, I handed my mother my Christmas list. That night after supper, I heard her tell my father,
"Tony wants binoculars."
"Binoculars?" Pop asked.
"That's what it says here."
My mother waved my list at him.
"It's the only thing he's asked for."
"What's he going to do with binoculars?"
my father asked. All this time, I was sitting on the floor, leaning up against a chair, reading a book about Wilt the Stilt. Did they think I couldn't hear or what? I didn't look up from my book. I pretended to be absorbed in my reading.
"Tony,"
my mother said,
"what are you going to do with binoculars?"
I didn't answer. My mother repeated her question.
"I said, what are you going to do with binoculars?"
This time I looked at her.
"What?
Oh, binoculars." I had my answer carefully planned. I knew they'd ask why I wanted them, but I had to be really casual about it or they might get suspicious. "Watch birds," I said.
"Birds?"
my mother asked. "Yes," I told her. "This spring I want to find out all I can about birds." My mother smiled.
"It all goes to show," she told my father. "If you take a boy out of the city and put him close to nature, he'll become a better person."
I wouldn't exactly say Rosemont is close to nature, but I didn't argue with my mother. I knew I'd be getting my binoculars. I had another dream about Lisa. This time I was hiding in her closet while she was getting ready for bed. When I came out, she didn't scream. She was glad to see me like she knew I was there all along. Corky was in this dream, too. She was dressed up like a cheerleader, and all through the best part of the dream, Corky jumped around and shouted cheers. The next night, when I started upstairs to do my homework, my mother said,
"Vic, go on up with him."
Now, why did she say that? Why does she want him to come upstairs with me? That means something. Maybe they know about me. Maybe I talk in my sleep. My father followed me up the stairs. When we got to the top, he said,
"Tony, I'd like to have a talk with you, just for a minute, okay?"
I looked down. My mother was standing at the bottom of the stairs, smiling. "Sure, Pop," I mumbled.
In private, Tony?
My father said.
In your room.
We walked to my room, and when we were both inside, Pop closed the door.
He knows. I'm sure he knows about me. I always knew he could read my mind. This proves it.
Wait a minute. Maybe it's just going to be a talk about how I'm doing in school, or what I want to be, or something easy like that. I hope so. I really do. Did I do something wrong, Pop? I asked.
No, no, Pop said. Nothing like that. I just thought we'd have a little talk. You know, kind of man to man.
Uh-oh, here it comes. I was right the first time. What'll I say? Nothing. I won't say a word. I'll let him say it. I sat down on my bed. Pop pulled my desk chair over and sat close to me. He looked around for a while, rubbing his hands together, almost like he was praying.
Tony,
he finally said.
Yes, Pop?
Well, now that you're in seventh grade, there are things you should know about.
While he was talking, Pop cracked each of his knuckles. Yes, Pop?
Oh, I don't know. Maybe Ralph should be the one to talk to you. He's a lot closer to your age.
Pop stopped talking and looked around my room. Then he coughed a little and started again.
You see, Tony, there are things you should know about girls and about babies and about... Look, Tony, do you know anything?
He doesn't know about my dreams, I thought. This has nothing to do with what I've been thinking about. He really doesn't know. He's more scared than I am.
Tony, I asked you, do you know anything?
Sure, Pop, I said.
You do? And you know about babies? How they're made?
Sure, Pop, since third grade. My father looked like he couldn't believe it.
Since third grade?
Sure, Pop. Big Joe told me all about it.
You're positive you have the right information?
Sure, Pop.
Do you know other things too, Tony?
Sure, Pop, a lot. My father looked relieved.
Well, he said, the important thing to remember is that I'm here to answer all your questions.
Okay, Pop, I'll remember. He rubbed his hands again.
I don't know, Tony. I feel like I should say more. Your mother thinks there's a lot for you to learn, but I don't know what to tell you. I never told Vinny or Ralph anything. I don't even know how Vinny learned. From his friends, I guess. And Vinny told Ralph, so I'm not too experienced when it comes to discussing the subject. But listen, Tony, man to man, you can always come to me.
Okay, Pop. I got up and stretched. My father stood up and put his arm around me.
Hey, Tony, how about a quick game of chess?
Okay, Pop, I guess I can do my homework later. When we were downstairs, my mother gave Pop a look that said, well, and he gave her one back that said, everything's taken care of. The next day, my father handed me a book called Basic Facts About Sex. He said I should read it in my spare time, and if I have any questions, I should come to him. There's a whole section on wet dreams and another on masturbation. Maybe they do know about me after all. My stomach jumped around so bad I had to take a pill. We got ready for our first Christmas in Rosemont. First, we bought a live tree, not a little one, a big floor-to-ceiling one. We bought it at the high school field where the Boy Scouts hold their annual sale. I've always wanted a real Christmas tree. In Jersey City, we had a little white one that sat on top of the corner table. It looked nice, but it didn't have that great smell. Frankie's family had a live tree every year, and sometimes I used to just sit in his living room and sniff it for an hour. My mother bought a million tree ornaments at Bloomingdale's, including tinsel so wide we had to wrap it around the tree instead of just hanging it from branches. My father, being an ex-electrician, lit up the outside of our house with a lot of tiny bulbs in the bushes. They twinkle on and off. He set up spotlights to show off our front door, too. Maxine was in charge of the door. She covered it with gold foil to match the twinkles. Over the foil is a huge wreath. I have to admit, the house looks good. My mother tried to get Grandma to come downstairs to see our tree. Once a week, Mom insists she leave her room so Maxine can clean it and air it out. But instead of coming downstairs for an hour, Grandma locked herself up in my bathroom. I told my mother, Grandma's not looking so good. And my mother said,
how can she look good when she never gets fresh air?
So I said, maybe she gets some fresh air if you'd let her go back to doing the cooking.
How would that look to the neighbors? My mother asked. Like she's the maid or something. And I said, who cares about the neighbors? Grandma's worked hard all her life, my mother said. Now it's time for her to take it easy and enjoy herself. She doesn't act like she's enjoying it, I argued. Of course she is. Doesn't she love that color TV? How do I know? I said. Well, she watches it all day, doesn't she?
My mother bent over to pick a piece of lint off the carpet. That doesn't mean she likes it, I said. She just hasn't got anything better to do.
What do you want her to do, Anthony? Play golf with Diane Huber?
Uh-oh, she was getting mad now. But so was I. I shouted.
Maybe I want her to cook. That's enough, Anthony,
my mother said.
Maxine will hear you and get insulted.
Maxine is a lousy cook, I mumbled. That isn't true, but I felt like saying it. I was taking Dr. Holland's advice about when you feel like saying something, say it.
Watch your mouth, Anthony,
my mother said very low, making each word sink in.
It's growing faster than the rest of you.
Joel asked me to go Christmas shopping with him. I told him okay because I have a lot of allowance saved up and I want to buy something nice for everybody in our family. Now I'm sorry I said I'd go with him. Suppose he steals something. I feel like calling him to say, forget it, I can't go. But then he'll want to know why and what will I say? When Joel called for me, I was in the bathroom. My stomach hurt. But in a little while, the pain went away and we went downtown together. Once we got to the store, I followed Joel around like a detective. Every time he put his hands in his pockets, I was there to make sure he hadn't taken anything. Once we were loaded down with shopping bags, I really had a hard time. I paid more attention to Joel than to my shopping list. I was surprised to see that he paid for everything. Maybe Joel never really stole those batteries. Maybe it was all my imagination. It could have been a mistake. But what about the apples at lunch? He steals one every day, and that's not my imagination. I helped Joel pick out his present for Lisa. We decided on this stretch sweater that the sales lady said fits like a second skin. Joel chose the color, green. I liked the orange one better. The day before Christmas, a piano arrived at our house, a baby grand. 6 men delivered it. It was my father's gift to the whole family, but my mother had gone along with him to pick it out, so I was really the only one surprised. When it was all set up in front of the living room windows, my mother got tears in her eyes and said,
"It's absolutely gorgeous. I've always wanted a piano. Oh, Vic, I'm so happy."
With that, she threw her arms around my father's neck and kissed him. I don't like them to act that way in front of me.
"Do you like it, Tony?"
my father asked, untangling himself from my mother. "It's really neat," I said. "But nobody here plays the piano."
"Not yet,"
my mother said, putting an arm around my shoulder. I knew it was coming. Piano lessons for me. Sometimes I wish we didn't have so much money. How can I tell them I don't want piano lessons? How can I tell them I don't even clap my hands in time to music? I don't even sing in the shower. I'm that bad. On Christmas morning, we waited for Ralph, Angie, and Vicky to arrive before we opened anything. Here's what I got. 2 V-neck cashmere sweaters, the kind Joel wears. One from my parents and the other from Angie and Ralph. A set of encyclopedias. And super deluxe extra powerful binoculars. The card said, "For our son, the bird watcher. With all our love, Mom and Pop." We gathered upstairs in Grandma's room to watch her open her presents. She got a robe and slippers from my mother and father, a robe and slippers from Ralph and Angie, and a silver toothbrush from me. I bought it in the department they call For the Woman Who Has Everything. Grandma doesn't have everything, of course, but at least this was something different. The only time she smiled was when she opened the silver toothbrush, so I was glad I gave it to her. That night I kneeled by my window and waited. Lisa's lights were on and her shades were up as usual. I don't think she ever bothers pulling them down. Finally, she came into her room. My hands were really shaking. I couldn't even hold my binoculars steady. The view was great, just great. It was like she was standing right in front of me. I could even see the expression on her face. She was smiling. She has a terrific smile. The first thing she did was try on the green stretch sweater. She turned around and around in front of her mirror. She doesn't have to worry. She's beautiful from every angle. I wanted to tell her that. I watched until her lights went out. I love her, I think. The next day, Mrs. Huber rang our bell, and I thought, she knows. She knows I've got binoculars and that I watched Lisa last night. She's going to tell my parents, and they'll take away my binoculars and tell me I've got a dirty mind. They'll move me to another bedroom so I can't see her anymore. Maybe I'll even spend 6 weeks in the juvenile detention center. If I do, I hope Lisa will come on visiting day. But I was all wrong. Mrs. Huber only wanted to give us some candies from England and wish us a Merry Christmas. When she left, she called to my mother.
Don't forget, lunch at the club in 2 weeks. On Friday. See you then, Carol.
Carol? Who's Carol? I asked when Mrs. Huber was gone. My mother laughed.
Oh, that's what Diane calls me. She says Carmela's too hard to remember.
Just like Millicent. Just like their maid.
What's the difference, Tony?
Your name is not Carol, I yelled. My mother just stared at me. Why don't you tell her if she can't remember your name, then you don't want to be her friend? I wanted my mother to yell back at me, but she didn't. She turned to my father and spoke very slow.
I don't know, she said. You raise them with kid gloves, and then they walk all over you. What's the point?
She repeated.
What's the point?
Over and over as she left the room. I ran upstairs and locked myself into the bathroom. I knew I'd get sick now, and it would be my mother's fault. She'd be sorry. In a few minutes, my father knocked on the door and called.
You all right, Tony?
I'm okay, I muttered.
I'd like to talk to you.
I have nothing to say.
Come on, Tony. Open up the door.
I unlocked it and said, it's open. Then I turned on the water and splashed my face. When I was through, my father handed me a towel.
A name's not so important, Tony, my father said. What's inside you is what counts. But not a name. It's just like Tony instead of Anthony. What's the difference if Mrs. Huber wants to call your mother Carol and she doesn't mind? It's not going to change her. You heard her, Tony. She's very upset about you.
I'm sorry, I said. I felt like I did on Veterans Day when I stood over Vinny's grave. Guilty. The next week I started my piano lessons. The teacher is Miss Orenberg, and she comes to the house every Thursday from 4 till 4:45. She has bad breath, which I reported to my mother after the first lesson.
Maybe she ate something she shouldn't have, my mother said. Diane Huber says she's an excellent teacher. Lisa took from her for years.
But Miss Orenberg smelled the same the following week. When I told my mother, she said she'd see what she could do. After that, my mother greeted Miss Orenberg at the door with chlorophyll candies.
Take one, she'd say. It'll refresh you for Tony's lesson.
After the fourth lesson, Miss Orenberg asked me did I practice much. I told her about 15 minutes a day. Miss Orenberg said she found that hard to believe, and I told her if she didn't believe me, she could ask my mother because it was true. Then she said I wasn't progressing as fast as she had hoped I would. And I said that I wasn't because I wasn't musically inclined and I really didn't want piano lessons in the first place. I wanted to add that I didn't like her or her breath or the way she talked, but I didn't. That night I told my mother that I was never going to learn to play the piano and there was nothing she could do about it, and that if she made me take any more lessons, my pains were going to get worse. And why didn't she ask Dr. Holland if it was good for me to have to take piano lessons when I didn't want to at all? The next day Pop said,
Tony, your mother and I have decided that if you don't want to take piano lessons, you don't have to.
Really? I asked.
You really mean it?
I looked at my mother. She didn't answer me, but she nodded her head a little. Pop said,
We're not going to force you to do something you hate. I just wish you'd remember that we only want you to have every opportunity we couldn't give your brothers.
I wanted to say to let me alone and stop trying to shove everything that Ralph and Vinny didn't have down my throat. But I couldn't say it because that would have hurt their feelings. And they weren't trying to be mean. But sometimes they're so full of bull they make me sick. My parents joined the newcomers club at church. They went to a couple of parties and they said they met a lot of nice people. But they still haven't been invited to the Huber's house. And I think my mother would rather go there than all the other places put together. Father Pissarro II visits Grandma every week. I go to confession once a month, same as in Jersey City. I've thought a lot about what to confess. For a while, I thought I should tell him about Lisa, but I decided that watching her at night isn't really a sin. As long as it doesn't hurt anyone, what's so wrong about it? There are a couple of things I'd like to talk over with somebody. Not with Joel, though, and not with Marty Endo or Scott Gold, either. Whenever we have a discussion, it always turns into a big joke. Maybe if we still lived in Jersey City, I'd ask Ralph. But I'm not sure about that, either. He acts so old lately. My father said to ask him if I have questions, but I know he's hoping I never have any. I'm thinking about going to Ted Gibbons, to ask him if he ever had dreams like me, and then to find out what he did about them. Ted is really proud of our youth group, and especially our basketball team. We've only lost one game so far, and even though he tells us he doesn't care who wins, because it's how you play the game that counts, I can tell he's pleased. This coming Friday night, we're playing the First Methodist Youth Group. They're the only other team in the league that's lost just one game. Ted said he's going to bring a date to this game, some girl he really likes a lot. I'm getting used to Corky. She doesn't bother me the way she used to. She still spends a lot of time giggling, but she's turned into a pretty good cheerleader. She doesn't look anything like Lisa, but she sure can yell loud. For a while, she tried to sit next to me in church every Sunday, but now I make sure I'm between my mother and my father, so she leaves me alone. On Friday night, my father and Ralph came to see the big game. My team got to start. I was really in good form. I scored 6 points in foul shots alone. At the end of the first half, we were leading by 2 points. The Methodist guys were pretty good. In the second half, Marty Endo's team took over and we dropped 2 points behind. 3 minutes before the end of the game, Marty tripped on his shoelace and fell flat on his face. Timeout was called and we all ran onto the court. Marty was out cold. His mother and father were at the game, and they came flying down from the bleachers. His mother got really upset when she saw him stretched out on the floor and she started to cry. Oh my God! Oh my God! It's a good thing Marty didn't hear her. He'd have been furious. When Marty came to, he didn't know what had happened. But when he tried to stand up, he said he felt dizzy and nauseous and he had a big bump on his head. Ted said it could be a concussion, so Mr. and Mrs. Endo decided to take Marty straight to the hospital. With only 3 minutes left to play and our team down 2 points, Ted called me. Go on in, Tony. Do your stuff. Corky squealed when she saw me running in and started cheering like crazy. I didn't even have a chance to get nervous. Because I wasn't on the court for 20 seconds when this big guy from First Methodist gave me an elbow in the stomach, the referee blew his whistle and called a personal foul. It was very quiet. Everybody was watching me. I thought about Ted and about Marty and about how much we'd all like to win this game. Then I aimed and threw the ball. Nice and easy, the way Ted said to do it when you're under pressure. Right in the basket! The crowd started yelling, and some of the guys patted me on the backside. We were only 1 point behind. First Methodist had the ball. They were stalling, passing it back and forth, when Greg Kusev jumped up and intercepted. Now it was our ball. When we got within shooting distance of our basket, Greg passed the ball to me. I dribbled around, but I couldn't shoot. I was being guarded by the biggest guy on their team. I wanted to make a basket so bad. I wanted to be the big hero, but I had no chance. So I passed it to Jim Quinn, and he put it in just as the whistle blew to end the game. We won! We won! Our whole youth group ran onto the court and we all jumped around and hugged each other. When Ted stepped out, Corky led us in a cheer just for him. Then I saw this blonde girl come rushing at Ted. She threw her arms around him and gave him a big kiss, and we all stopped cheering to watch Ted and his girlfriend. And that's when it hit me. The girl was Lisa. My Lisa standing there kissing Ted, right in public, for everyone to see. Ted and his mustache. It wasn't fair. She should have been kissing me. I'm the one who won the game. Well, I did, didn't I? Who knows what would have happened if Marty hadn't tripped over a shoelace and knocked himself out? Who knows? While I was thinking about that, Corky asked me to go out for ice cream with her and some other kids from our youth group. But all of a sudden, I didn't feel like celebrating anything. So I told her, some other time, maybe. And she said, oh, Tony. And I knew she was really disappointed, but I didn't care much. I went home with my father and Ralph, and even though they kept saying how great I played, I didn't want to hear it. I called up Mrs. Endo to see how Marty was, and she said he was very groggy, but that the doctor promised he'd be okay in 2 days. I said I was glad to hear that. Then I told my family how tired I was from the big game, and I went up to my room and fell asleep. I tried not to think about Lisa. I didn't feel like having any dreams. I just wanted to sleep and forget about everything. But I dreamed about her and Ted and the things they probably do when they're alone, and I knew I'd never asked Ted any of the questions I was thinking about asking him. Toward the end of February, Frankie Bellino called. I couldn't believe it at first.
"Hey, Frankie, is it really you?"
I asked.
"None other,"
Frankie said. I asked him about my old paper route, which he reported was doing fine, about the old basketball game, which they were still playing, about junior high, which he said wasn't so bad, and about the weather, which was dumb, because it was the same as in Rosemont, except we get more snow than Jersey City. After that, I didn't have anything else to say, but Frankie did.
"Why don't you come back to see us sometime?"
I said,
"Why don't you come see me?"
Then we both laughed until Frankie said,
"Okay, when?"
"When what?" I asked.
"When should I come see you?"
I said, "Are you serious?" He said,
"Sure."
I said,
"Hey, that's great. Why don't you come on Saturday and stay overnight?"
He said,
"Swell."
"Wait a second while I tell my parents," I said. I put down the phone and ran into the other room.
"Guess who's on the phone?"
I asked my mother and father.
"It's Frankie Bellino. I invited him to stay overnight this Saturday."
My father said,
"I'll pick him up in New York, at the Tubes. That'll save him a train ride out here."
"Thanks, Pop,"
I called, already on my way back to the phone. I picked up the receiver and said,
"Hey, Frankie, it's all arranged. My father will pick you up at the Tubes in New York Saturday."
"What time?"
Frankie asked.
"Oh, whatever time you say."
"How about 8?
"In the morning?"
"Too early?"
Frankie asked.
"Yeah, better make it around 10. "Okay, Tony. See you then."
"Right," I said, and hung up. I really felt good. I wondered why I haven't thought about calling Frankie. I'm sure glad he called me. I went into the living room.
"How about that?" I said. "Good old Frankie Bellino." "You've got plenty of friends in Rosemont," my mother said. "I don't see why you have to start up with him."
"What's that supposed to mean?" I asked.
"I've got nothing against Frankie," she said. "It's just that Jersey City is a long way off, and you can't see each other very often, so you might as well concentrate on your new friends."
But my father said,
"There's no friend like an old friend. Right, Tony?"
To be honest, I have to admit that I hardly ever think about Frankie and the other guys anymore. I don't really miss them. Still, I'm looking forward to Frankie's visit. I rode into the city with my father on Saturday morning. Frankie was already there, waiting at the Tubes. He was carrying an airline bag. He recognized our car right away and ran straight over.
"Hey, old pal,"
he hollered.
"Hey, Frankie."
We sat in the back on the way home to Rosemont, and when my father pulled into our driveway, Frankie let out a low whistle and said,
"Wow, you sure have come a long way."
"Never mind the house," I said, embarrassed.
"Come on in."
My mother was waiting for us.
"Hello, Frank."
Frankie dropped his airline bag on the floor and said,
"Hiya, Mrs. Miglione."
He kept looking around at the house, saying,
"Wow,"
and shaking his head.
"Well, it's nice to see you, Frank,"
my mother said. I knew what she was thinking, that he didn't shake hands like certain other persons we know.
"My mother says to tell you she sends regards, and when are you coming back to Jersey City for a visit?"
Frankie said.
"Oh, well, I've been busy,"
my mother said.
"You know, Ralph and Angie had a baby, and I've been helping out."
"This is some place,"
Frankie said.
"Come on, cut it out, will you?"
I said, giving Frankie an elbow in the ribs.
"It's just a house."
Later, I asked him how Mrs. Gorski was, and he told me she says I was the best paperboy she ever had, and that she misses me a lot.
"That's crazy,"
I told Frankie.
"She hated me."
"Well, now she hates me," Frankie said.
"Say, where's your grandmother? Doesn't she live with you anymore?"
"Oh, sure," I said, "but she stays in her room most of the time. She doesn't feel too well. I don't think I'll ever tell anyone the truth about Grandma. I'm too ashamed." Maxine made my favorite chicken for supper. Did she give me a special look when she served it? I'm not sure. I try to stay out of her way these days. I always bend my head when she comes into the dining room so she can't look me in the eye. I can't tell if she knows about me or not. My sheets don't get changed every time I have a dream, but it seems to me Maxine smiles a lot more than she used to, and always when I'm around.
Wow, Frankie said. This is just great food, Mrs. Miglione.
Thank you, Frank. We'll have to tell Maxine how much you enjoyed it. She does all the cooking.
You know, Frankie said for about the millionth time, this is really some place you have here.
He drank half a glass of milk.
My mother said I should be sure to notice all the little things so I can tell her all about it.
After supper, Joel called and invited me and Frankie over. My father announced that he and my mother were going to a movie and that we could come along if we wanted to.
What are you going to see? I asked.
The Last Stranger, my mother said.
What's it about? I asked.
Love?
I looked at Frankie.
No thanks, I said. We'll go to Joel's.
I think Frankie was even more impressed with Joel's house than mine. It's bigger, and of course there are spotlights to show off the pool in the backyard.
Frankie couldn't believe the Hoober's bedroom. He said, wait till I tell my mother about this.
I thought maybe I'd be able to see Lisa, but she was already out on a date. She goes out just about every Saturday night, sometimes on Fridays, too. I know because I waited up for her once or twice, but she's been coming in later and later. And she doesn't go out only with Ted. I can tell by the different cars that pick her up. Now I only get to see her 4 or 5 times a week. We went into Joel's room where he showed Frankie his paperback collection. Frankie said it's even better than Big Joe's. After that, Joel asked,
you guys want some beer?
What? Are you kidding? I said.
No, I meant it. Didn't you ever drink beer?
Joel said.
You know I didn't, I told him. Frankie said, me neither, but I'll try it, if Tony does too.
So we followed Joel down to the recreation room where there's a really fancy bar with bar stools and everything. We started with one can. Joel had some first and passed it to me. I choked and passed it to Frankie. We had another can when we polished off that one, and then Joel asked us, did we want to taste something even better? Frankie said anything would be better than that, so Joel got out 4 bottles and lined them up on top of the bar. Scotch, rye, vodka, and brandy. He said we'd have to drink from the bottles, because if we messed up any glasses, his father would know we'd been fooling around. We started with the scotch, which burned my throat. Then the vodka, which Joel said has no taste at all and should be gulped because it would make us feel good really fast. Then the rye, which burned my throat some more. After that, Joel passed around the brandy because he said that was for after dinner. That's when Frankie fell off the bar stool and started to laugh.
Wow, I never heard such a crazy laugh. I mean, he just stretched out on the floor and laughed like a nut.
Who is your friend? Joel asked me.
I don't know. I never saw him, I said.
It was hard to get the words out.
Me neither. Must be some drunk.
Yeah, must be. I got off my bar stool and sat down on the floor next to Frankie.
Hey, mister, you some drunk or what?
Frankie just laughed, so I started laughing too. But when I lay down on the floor, the whole room started spinning, around and around and around. I couldn't make it stop for anything.
Hey, Joel, the room's going round. Come here and see.
So Joel stretched out next to us and he said,
yeah, sure is. All around and around and around, like a merry-go-round. I told you, I said. Didn't I tell you? Whole room's going round. Yeah, Joel said. You told me. Know what?
What?
I said. I don't feel so good. Me neither. Let's go outside, get some air.
Since Frankie was still laughing, me and Joel had to lift him up and drag him over to the back door. We went outside with no coats or anything.
Oh, nice, Joel said. That's so nice. Real nice, I said. Good clean air. Know what?
Frankie said.
It's cold out here.
Yeah, I said.
Nice cold clean air. Know what?
Joel said.
I think I'm gonna be sick. No kidding, I said. Me too. Let's be sick together, Joel said. Sure, let's be sick in the bushes, I said.
Joel said,
yeah, the bushes is a good place to be sick. It's good for the bushes. Like, fertilizer.
All three of us were sick together. When we finished, I grabbed Frankie and pulled him home by the sleeve.
Was it cold out?
When we got to the front of my house, Frankie said,
wait one more minute, Tony.
I was freezing and feeling pretty bad besides.
What now?
I groaned. Frankie laughed and said,
I'm gonna fertilize your bushes too.
Well, we made it into bed. And we weren't sick again, but the next morning I told Frankie he looked green, and he told me that if I thought he looked green, I should just see me. So we staggered to the mirror together and discovered we were both kind of green, only it didn't feel as funny as it sounded. Besides my color, my head felt like six hammers were trying to split it open at once. Since it was Maxine's day off, nobody bothered us about getting up and having breakfast. We finally managed to get dressed around noon. Then we had to sneak next door for our jackets. Frankie left late in the afternoon after telling me and my parents what a great time he'd had. Privately, he told me what a terrific town Rosemont was, and he sure wished his father could strike it rich, too. At the front door, my mother took a good look at us and said,
you sure you're all right, Frank?
Frankie said,
sure thing, Mrs. McDonald.